94.9 KUOW Seattle and KUOW.org. We again take up the question of thousands of kids who are trapped in prostitution, who know all too well what the life is like, and some of them would like to get out of it. How they are being helped to get out of it, and how you might help as well. Noel Gomez was in the sex industry for 15 years, starting at age 16. After stripping for 5 years after that, she's left the industry, been out for 6 years. She's a teacher of people who need to learn what prostitution is like, those prostitutes themselves. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no nodding your head like we did.
Okay.
Joanna Ward, who did nod her head last time she was here, is detention case manager at Youth Care's Orion Center. Orion Center founded in 1974, Youth Care founded in 1974, the first shelter for homeless youth on the West Coast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
What has prompted you to do what has to be pretty emotionally draining work? What keeps you going back every day?
Well, I absolutely...
I'd start with the big one.
end with Excellent. I absolutely love my job. I think that the young people I work with are amazing and they're strong and they are hopeful and they would like to go to school.
Hopeful?
Yes, they're very hopeful. They would like to go to school. They would like to have jobs. They would like to have stable housing.
Tell me about that hopefulness, because I would think that you're dealing with, you know, sort of the stereotype is we're dealing with young people. You'd be dealing with young people who are not hopeful, but forlorn and worn down in their young lives by a hard life.
Well, they are definitely exhausted and abused and traumatized, but they also are like the most, they are the most resilient and amazing young people. The fact that they have survived for often 3, 4, 5 years from age 11 on the street is, that just speaks to their strength and their resilience. And they continue to have goals for their future. They, when you ask them what they want to be when they grow up, they still say a doctor, they still say a lawyer, they still say a teacher, they still say a journalist. They still believe that they have a future.
Detention case manager sounds very formal and a little scary. What is that work?
So I don't tell youths that I'm the detention case manager, but I do. It does mean that I just am part of my grant is through DYS and through the county to go into
DYS.
Detention Youth Services. And so I go into juvenile detention several times a week and meet with youth in detention, and I have access to detention, which is very critical because that's when the youth often are most interested in engaging with adults.
Because they're bored?
I have a captive audience. Yes, they are. They're bored. And they're ready to talk to anybody. And I also feel like they get that time to think about their lives a little bit more. They have a little space and time away from everything that they're involved in. And that's often when they do have some realizations about their lives. And they definitely rethink some things. And it's a critical time to bring in different options and choices.
So are they also, they're drying out if they're using drugs or mm-hmm. alcohol? This is a time when they're also getting
yes.
a little more clear-headed.
So, and I do have some youth that I can't speak with for the first 3 to 5 days they're there because they're detoxing so badly.
I mean, there would be no use right. in you speaking to them. Also, they're away from the people who control their lives.
Yes, they're away pimps. From their pimps, and so it gives them a moment. But often, if their pimps have programmed them and they've worked for them for a decent period of time, it doesn't mean anything because they still will be following their pimp's rules while they're in detention.
Program them.
Yes. They have pimp rules, pimp code, pimp culture.
People are told what to do, where to do it,
when to do it, how much they have to bring home, what time they need to come home, where they need to be, when they need to be there. The thing that is very terrifying is that the pimps have very cleverly and intelligently figured out exactly what these girls need and figured out how to give it to them in a way that keeps them in this dangerous and terrifying and abusive lifestyle. So they give them food, they give them shelter, they give them clothing, they give them a perception of love. And so what our roles as service providers and community members is to do is to provide them that shelter, that safe shelter. And if they're sleeping on a nice mattress in a nice hotel room, while it's not a home, if you bring them to a place where they have a raggedy, uncomfortable bed, they're going to think, well, I had something better elsewhere.
That's Joanna Ward, detention case manager at Youth Cares Orion Center. So, Noelle, did all that ring true?
Yes, yes. Joanna definitely knows what she's talking about.
Do you have to talk to these girls, right? I know you talk to, and when you're teaching classes,
yeah.
you're talking to prostitutes of all ages.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what's the difference between a prostitute who's 25, who's had that grooming maybe but has gone on, and a prostitute who's 14, 15 in terms of that code?
Okay. Well, a prostitute who's 14 or 15.
By the way, is 25 too old, the way you looked at me there?
No, 25 is not too old. Usually by the time they get to that age, they're pretty much, this is what I'm doing, and this is, you know, my man, and this is my life, and this is, I mean, because you go where your money goes, you know. If you've been paying this guy for 6-7 years, and he has all, you know, everything, the cars, you know, everything, you know, usually the girls will want to stay with that man, and usually they love them. A girl who's 14 or 15, we have a much better chance of helping her just make different decisions for her life, and getting her to see that this man does not love her and that he is not good for her, and that she's being abused and that she can have something better.
We're looking at lives of teenagers this hour on Weekday with Noelle Gomez, who is teaching a class now for the city in prostitution. She was in the sex industry. And Joanna Ward, detention case manager at Youth Cares Orion Center. They work with young people. So I use the phrase young 14-year-old prostitutes. You chafe at that because?
Because 14-year-olds are not prostitutes.
Are they?
They're exploited youth. They're victims of sexual abuse, of sexual trauma, of assault.
Do you look back on your life when you were 15, 16 as being a victim of sexual abuse, Noelle?
Definitely. I do now. It took many years of being out of the life to realize that I was a victim. I always thought that it was my fault, and I had, you know, very low self-esteem and blamed myself for, you know, what I got myself into. But looking back, I realized that I was totally manipulated and abused, and I wasn't old enough to make those kind of decisions. The men who would, the Johns, often, you know, when I was 16 or 17, I looked 16 or 17. I didn't look older. And, you know, they don't care.
Who are the pimps? Do you deal with pimps now? I mean, do you ever run across pimps in prison or in the detention center, any of those places? Or on the streets?
I stay as far away from pimps as I possibly can. I know one when I see one.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still, after even all these years, programmed not to. I don't look at them. I don't make eye contact with them. I keep my head down and I just keep walking. That's the way I was groomed and trained.
By your pimp?
By my pimp. And still to this day, that's what I do. Not that anything's going to happen to me at this point because I have a pimp and, you know, I'm out of pocket.
Out of pocket?
Out of pocket. Yeah, if you have a pimp and you talk to another pimp, you're out of pocket. So basically that means that your pimp is going to do something to you, probably beat you up for talking to another pimp, or worse.
How do you identify them? How do you know? What are the telltale signs that tell you, oh, that's a pimp?
The pimps I'm talking about are the pimps that drive the, you know, Mercedes with the tinted windows and wearing the suits and, you know, looking real nice and sharp and, you know, talking to every girl that, you know, is walking by. And yeah, those are the guys I'm talking about. There's a certain way they walk, certain way they talk, certain way they even start a conversation with you. I just know it too well.
How'd you meet your pimp?
I met him in a grocery store parking lot. I wasn't grocery shopping. I just was there with a friend, and we were meeting up with some guys, and I didn't know he was a pimp. I was just told he was a regular guy. He immediately started asking me questions about my living situation, you know, my family situation, things of that, my relationship with my father, things of that nature were...
Right away, huh?
Right away.
Did he see something in you that told him that you were, that you could be asked those questions or that you had answers that were going to help him? What?
Well, I think he was hoping that he was going to be able to pimp...
He was trolling me,
yeah. And once he found out that I did not have a good relationship with my father, that I actually at the time was living with my son's grandmother. I had a son when I was 16. And found out that I was very vulnerable and I didn't have nice things and I didn't have, you know, cars and stuff like that and I didn't get to travel. He realized that I was a perfect victim.
What happened?
Well, he groomed me for several months. He didn't tell me right away he was a pimp. He just acted like my boyfriend, but he was very, very, very controlling. And to me, that meant love.
Why do you say that?
Because that's the way I was raised, with a father that was very controlling towards my mother and very verbally abusive. I just wanted somebody to love me. I just wanted somebody to accept me. And I didn't feel like I got that acceptance or love from my father. So basically, this man turned into my father. He was very, very good at just telling me what I wanted to hear and, you know, promising me all these things. And then, you know, I didn't find out that he was actually a real pimp until we went to Hollywood. He took me to Hollywood on a trip, which I was really excited about.
How old are you now? 16?
I might have been 17 by that time. But I was really excited about, because I'd never been to Hollywood, you know, and I have all these big dreams as a young girl of, like, being a model or being an actress or whatever. And we were going to Hollywood. And once we got there, you know, he took my ID. He took everything. And by that time, he had also kind of stopped me from having relationships other than him. So I had cut off most of my friends by that time, cut off any family contacts that I had. It was just him. He was all that I had.
Was he physically abusive?
Yes.
By that time?
Yes.
He was already beating you?
He would slap me around. It didn't get bad until after I started prostituting. When he would slap me, he would say, oh, it's because you need to understand, you need to learn, and this is how I teach you because I love you. You know, and I thought that was what love was. So by the time we got to L.A., you know, he had my ID. He had everything, all my belongings. You know, I'm just in L.A. I don't know anybody or anywhere to go. And he basically tells me, you have to go out there and prostitute. You know, and I knew that if I didn't, that I was in big trouble. And
You already knew what that would mean.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And so I did. And then after that, it was like an everyday thing. And then he started teaching me the whole game and all the rules and everything like that.
Are you on the corner at this point, or are you working out of
I was right on Sunset Boulevard.
And where's he in that?
At the hotel room. And later...
Where you'll be bringing your clients?
No.
Different hotel room.
Never brought my clients anywhere near him. He didn't protect me or anything like that. Like, they say pimps are there to protect you, but they don't protect you because they're not there. You know, they're not, like, following the car that you're in and, you know, making sure you're okay. Later on, as the relationship continued, you know, I'd be out working and he'd be at the clubs trying to recruit other girls. As long as I came back when I was supposed to and had the amount of money that I was supposed to have, then, you know, I was okay, and I probably wouldn't get beat up that night.
So you stayed with him for 7 years?
Yeah.
So what makes you stay with somebody who's doing that to you? You both talked about programming, so help me understand that programming.
Programming, grooming.
You didn't like it, right? I know you must not have liked being a prostitute, did you?
No, I didn't like it, but I didn't see any way out after a certain amount of time. It was like, this is what I'm doing. This is what I do. This is my life. These are the cards I was dealt, and I'm just going to play them the best way I can in life.
It was dangerous for you, right?
It was very dangerous. I've been beat with baseball bats. I've been stunned with stun guns. I've been maced. I've been raped several times. I've been thrown. I've had to jump out of moving cars. It's very dangerous. And then not only do you have to deal with the Johns that are dangerous, but then you have to go home and deal with your pimp, who's also abusive.
Was he crazy?
Yes. I believe he was a sociopath. Yes, definitely, because he's had that charming side to him as well. I mean, he wasn't, he had a very charismatic personality, very, very charming when he wanted to be, very, you know, loving when he wanted to be, but he could just turn at any, you know, at any moment.
Yeah, I'm focusing on the pimps because they're the actors in this crime.
Oh, yeah.
They're the criminals in this crime.
Yeah.
He went to prison?
He went to prison eventually. Ended up leaving him before all that happened. But I guess three girls ended up testifying against him eventually, and he got a lot of time in federal prison. And he ended up 2.5 years ago, he was murdered in federal prison.
Did you keep in touch with him?
I did.
How come?
I just remained loyal. I don't know. He was like my father. He was like my father. And even though I had left him and I was out, you know, out of the game as far as he was concerned, he still, you know, he used to say, oh, you're too old now. I can't manipulate you anymore, you know, and you know the game and everything. And, you know, pretty much I paid my dues for being taught the game. You know, he would be friendly with me and call me, write me letters.
Were you friends with him? I mean, did you consider him a friend?
No, not really a friend. More like a advisor.
Advisor.
Yeah. Yeah. And
you told Katie Sewell when she was talking to you, to this day, I've never loved another man more than I love him. Present tense, I love him.
That's true.
He still is in your head in as somebody present.
Yeah. It's hard for me to believe that he's dead. It's very hard for me to believe. I mean, I had to go see his body to believe it. And even seeing his body there, I still have a hard time believing it because to me, he was God.
God?
Yeah.
That's an awful... I mean, you teach this class. You hear mm-hmm. other women.
Yeah.
They say the same thing. You
yeah.
understand what they're saying. They understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You want to break? I mean, is that something you want to break, that notion?
Yes, I want to break that
notion. But it's
notion.
Hard, huh?
Yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard. And when I'm teaching the class, you know, I talk more about, you know, moving on and doing other things with your life and, you know, getting to the point where, yeah, it hurts. But we have to understand that this person that we love so much doesn't love us. You know?
Hard. That's especially hard.
That's very hard.
How did you get out? What was it, just on your own? You just said, I got to make changes? Or was there something transitional or pivotal that happened?
Well, there was something with each stage that happened. Like the you know, the first stage of working on the streets, you know, for several years, I and getting away from my pimp, I did that. I had been...
How'd you get was that a decision you made? I'm getting away from this person?
Yes. Yes.
Because you were old enough to know that this abuse was abuse and not love?
I left. Yes, I knew that. But I also knew that I was sick and tired of getting beat up by Johns. There was a police officer that picked me up. He had taken me out to some Lemon Grove place. And I was running... I had pepper sprayed him, and I was running through the Lemon Grove, I don't know, screaming, and there was no houses around, but I did hear a dog barking.
Wait a minute, a police officer?
Well, he talked to me. He picked me up from this house.
Oh, from there, I see.
Mm-hmm, because the people who I was banging on their door, they called the police, and the police officer took me back to my hotel, and he talked to me a lot about, this is where we found the last, you know, how many dead prostitutes, and... You know, we really need to get out of this. And it was, I mean, he had a really good talk with me. And, you know, the first thing that the woman said, that whose door that I banged on that night, she looked at me and she just was crying. And she said, where is your mother? You know, and it was just like this moment of like, I got to get out of here. You know, I got to get out of here. And the next morning I called one of my regular Johns. And he paid for a taxi for me to come to his house in La Jolla, and he bought me a plane ticket, and I flew back to Seattle. And I left my pimp for good that time.
You made a lot of money as a prostitute? A
lot of money.
$200,000 a year?
Yeah.
This is when you were on your own?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of money.
Kind of hard to turn away from that?
Yeah, that addiction is insane.
Well, that's how you fill your life. That is an addiction, making that money and spending it?
Huge addiction, yes. You know, when you're making that kind of money, you don't look at price tags. You don't, you go where you want, when you want, you do what you want, when you want, you buy whatever you want.
But you're rare, right? Making $200,000 a year?
No.
That's typical? Even for 16, 17-year-olds?
Yeah.
That's what the pimps are bringing in on these girls.
Yeah.
So now you have a BA, you're a counselor.
Yeah.
What do you make?
about 30. Yeah. So I had to learn how to not buy everything I want, and I had to learn how to live a completely different way. And, I might not have money. Money, and I can say this, money does not give you happiness.
So you both said that your goal is to talk to these older women and the younger women to help them get out of this life. I imagine some of that must fall on deaf ears. Money does not give you happiness. These men don't really love you. So what's the trigger by which you think you are reaching people?
For me, it's longevity. So
you mean
the repeat? Yes. So frequently, there's only been a few occasions in which I've met a girl once in detention and she's gotten out and contacted me. Usually sometimes I have to meet with a kid for 2 years in detention before when they get out.
I mean, they get into detention, they get released, they come back. So they're bouncing
right.
it out.
So they're bouncing it out. And every time I see them, we have a conversation, we make some plans. I remind them of some of the opportunities they could have if they're working with me, the employment, the housing, the school, counseling, all that stuff. And we just have conversations about life, what's happening for them, what's going on.
And at some point, somebody says, oh, I get it.
Right. And it often isn't, it's not always leaps and bounds. So, a kid might get out and they might be like, well, I really want food stamps. And that's like my first step and the first sort of test. Oh, I want my ID. And we'll start with the small things. And sometimes kids will come in for 6 months and just talk with me, but they're actually not ready to do anything different. But they've found a safe place and a safe person.
So the same thing that you know. I mean, in the end, you're one-on-one with some of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the young people. I'm curious, though, about the older women that you're talking to, women in their 20s. Is there a point where they look at you and they look at themselves? There must be more that just say, okay, thanks, I'll see you, than say, okay, I'm ready to change.
Well, it's really hard because I only get one day with them. And like Joanna was saying, it takes several meetings usually to get some progress. I mean, I might plant a seed in their mind, hopefully, and maybe they'll make some changes, but I only get that one chance.
You think you do plant? Do you think there's anything in particular that plants a seed? Just your own story and your own presence there?
The story and them having the chance to open up and talk about how they feel and talk about self-esteem,
Is that the crux right there?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Here you are. Here's who you really are.
Yeah.
You're a person of value. You're a person of worth.
Oh, yeah. They've been beaten down so bad that there's nothing left. But there is that little tiny bit of hope because these are strong women.
Well, Gomez works with women and girls, a class in the city, talking to women who are in the sex trade. Joanna Ward is detention case manager at Youth Cares Orion Center, working with young people in detention to help them get out of the life as well. Appreciate you both talking to us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate you telling your story.
Yeah.
It's weekday.